When you talk about background checks stopping felons from getting guns or stopping other people, the key word there is initial denials, okay? It's not saying final denials that are there. And so President Obama will go and say, thanks, will go and say, there have been 2 million prohibited people that have been prevented from buying guns because of background checks. That's pretty much the language that we just heard a minute ago. That's simply not right. There have been 2 million initial denials. Now, I just give you a simple example. You may remember the late Senator Ted Kennedy, of course. And there were 5 times he was stopped from flying on a plane because he was on the no-fly list. Now, I assume we could count that as 5 times we stopped a terrorist from flying. But I don't think most people, I don't think President Obama or others would really count the late Senator Kennedy as a terrorist. It's just that he had a name that was sufficiently similar to the person that they were actually trying to check. So when they say there's so many, 76,000 people that have been stopped in the most recent year that we have data available for, there's a reason why prosecutions only went forward with 42 and they only got 13 convictions. And this isn't because either Obama or the Bush administration or the Clinton administration didn't want to go after people, as we were just being mentioned. It's because they were false positives. It's because they had somebody who had – it's like you have a name similar to a felon. That's not the same thing as stopping a felon. And the reason why that's costly and difficult is that when you're talking about 2 million people, you're going to be talking about – a small but significant percentage of those people who may have really needed a gun quickly for self-defense, and now they're being stopped and put in limbo for months and not being able to go and defend themselves. And so that's the cost of the background check system. Now, can you fix it? Sure, you could fix it, but I don't think they're interested in fixing it. I think the point that a lot of liberals push background checks are couple-fold. One is, in Colorado, for example, that was mentioned, or New York or other places, there are fees that you have to pay to be able to go and get a transfer of a gun. Well, they like having taxes on people getting guns because it reduces gun ownership. And my concern is that the people particularly affects are poor individuals, particularly poor minorities who live in high-crime urban areas. The very people that my research indicates are the ones who need guns the most for self-defense that you're disarming. So that's a real cost to having those types of things. In Colorado, in the state house, they had an amendment to the bill last year which would have exempted people below the poverty level from having to pay the transfer fee that was there. Democrats voted virtually unanimously against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay that tax. How often do Democrats vote virtually unanimously from exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay a tax? In this case, it was clear the point of the tax was really just to reduce gun ownership. Anyway, I could go on, but, I would have argued against the background checks differently. And, the thing in Washington obviously goes beyond even what's normally thought of as background checks. So anyway, the thing I was going to talk about today was a lot of the general misinformation that we've been getting about guns. I thought it was just this last week, the FBI put out a report on mass shootings. How many people saw the news coverage of that? I have to tell you, I must have gotten 200 emails asking me, when are you putting out a discussion on this? So I know you get these things. It takes a little while. Hopefully, the beginning of this week, we'll have something. But it's amazing how bad it is. Okay, so they have 160 cases where they define as mass shootings from 2000 to 2013, and they claim, the FBI claims, that that represents a 16% annual increase each year over the 14 years in the rate of mass shootings. Pretty exciting claim. Newspapers, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, CNN, New York Daily News, you literally do a Nexus search or something, you'll literally this week come up with thousands of news stories on that. It's almost impossible to avoid it. It's embarrassing how bad this is. First of all, over 40% of their 160 cases involve either no one shot, either killed or wounded, or one person killed. Okay, most of them are, in fact, nobody wounded or killed. And you ask, well, why would you put that into this data on mass shootings? Well, the reason why they do, basically, is that most of those cases that they have are in the later years, so it helps cause the increase that they have there. Or some of the other problems. Well, another thing that they miss is they literally missed 33 cases where at least two people were killed. So they're putting this together, and you say, well, where are the cases that they're missing? Well, the cases that they're missing tend to be at the beginning of the period that's there. So that also tends to make it higher. Plus, even if they had them there, there's a problem with picking year 2000, 2001. You think 2000, that seems like a natural cutoff point, right? You know, it's you have a decade starting there. The thing is, 2000, 2001 were unusually low years in terms of mass shootings. And so you pick years where it's very low, you know, almost anything is going to look like an increase going on over time. I have data from work that I dealt with Bill Landis at the University of Chicago when I used to teach there that looked at all the mass shootings in the United States from 1977 through 99. So it was pretty easy for me to go back, pull up that data, and just say, well, how does it look? If we look at mass shootings, which I would think at least two people get killed in there, which is how we define it before, either two or three or four. Essentially, once you look at the whole period of time, clean up the data mistakes that the FBI had in this report, you essentially find no trend. There's a very, very slight increase over time, but it's essentially statistically insignificant. So hopefully, if you can give me your emails at the end, hopefully either one of the first few days this week we'll release this report. What I'd like, ideally, people to do is just write the news people who have written these stories and just say, how could you not check whether they were missing these cases or why they were setting this thing up? Because the amazing thing to me is that when you have gun control stuff that the media reports on, they never ask a critic. If my stuff gets picked up by the media, the reporters always feel obligated to have to ask somebody on the other side. But in this case, whether it's Obama's FBI, which they basically just politicized the FBI in order to put together this thing. I mean, you really have to work at it to do all the things that they did in order to try to slant it so it looks like there's an increase over time. Now, Obama's FBI is not the only one that's been doing this stuff. Bloomberg has been doing this for a while. He's had a couple reports that have come out on school shootings. He had a report that came out in February. They had another one that came out in June. And basically, they've argued that there's 75 public school shootings since Newtown between then and the end of this last school year. I had put together a report looking through their first report in February, and essentially it's unchanged. They didn't correct any of the mistakes that they had there. So, for example, they'll include a legitimate self-defense with a gun on school property as a Newtown-type shooting. If you have a 43-year-old man who commits suicide at 2 a.m. in the morning in the school, he's not related to the school, doesn't know anybody there, apparently he was just driving down the street, pulled into the parking lot, and committed suicide there. That, according to Bloomberg's people, is a Newtown-type shooting. If you have a gang fight off of school property, that's a Newtown, and it's at 9 o'clock at night, no students involved in either of the gangs, not even on school property, nobody from the school involved, shot in any way, harm, that's a Newtown-type shooting. And when you try to just boil down the 74 cases to things that people would normally associate with a Newtown shooting. So you have somebody going there with the expressed intent of going and killing as many people as possible. You know, not gang fights, not a robbery, not a suicide by somebody who's completely unconnected to the school. You find rather than 74 cases, there were 10. Now, 10 is bad, okay? It'd be nice if it was zero. But there are a couple points to make. One is, if you look over time, the number of cases and the number of fatalities have actually been falling over the last couple decades in terms of school shootings. But I think there's something deeper that goes on here. And the deeper thing is that the Bloomberg groups apparently didn't think that it would get them enough traction just to report the number of actual cases, that they had to go and pad the number that was there in order to try to go and get attention. Well, what should happen, and what I think we need help in doing, is trying to do things that point out to the media how could you run stories on this. When Bloomberg put out the report in February, within a week, you'll find, if you do a Nexus search, they got over 2,000 news stories around the country on it. When it came out in June, they didn't get quite as many. They got about 1,800 news stories within about a week. It should be, though, that, you know, because of the work that we did in February, we were able to get CNN and PolitiFact and some others to kind of point out the errors that were there. The PR person that works for the Crime Prevention Research Center really did yeoman work trying to deal with that. But I think it raised some doubt. But there's more doubt to be raised. So, for example, when they put out their study in July on mass shootings generally, school shootings were just a fraction of that. Again, they hadn't corrected any of the errors that they had made before. And they had all sorts of new things in there. You know, they missed cases that should have been in there. They had cases where they obviously hadn't even read the newspaper or couldn't have read it clearly in order to have it classified the way they did. But they couldn't even get simple things right. So they have a whole discussion there about mental illness of the individuals committing the crimes. I was able to go through, do news story searches on it, and within a couple hours, we're able to find that their claim that 10% of the people who had committed these attacks had some history of mental illness was actually 52%. They can't even get the ages of the people right in these studies. The amazing thing is, and this will be on the Crime Prevention Research Center website this coming week. It's something we've been working on. The Blaze, I think, is going to do a story on this. But, it's just amazing to me how many errors they can have. One of the big errors that they have is the types of places where these attacks occur. They want to argue. They have this whole kind of mantra going on now, going after, you know, Panetta, Kroger, you know, different stores there, trying to get them to be gun-free zones. Now, they really haven't changed very much, though they got a lot of PR for that. The media doesn't seem to understand there's a difference between saying, well, we're asking you not to bring guns, and them actually posting or doing anything that would stop people doing it, because they're not doing that. But this is part of their overall campaign. God knows how you link these studies on mass shootings to trying to make these places gun-free zones, because the permit holders surely aren't doing it. To me, if anything, it's the opposite. And what they've tried to do with this study that came out in July was to claim that 84% of mass shootings occurred where guns were allowed. Well, how did they get that? Well, one of the big things that they did was most of their sample is residential shootings. Okay? Nobody was arguing, classifying those as mass public shootings. What we've tried to deal with in the past is essentially the same type of definition that the FBI claimed that it was looking at there. And that is to see public places where, you know, guns were banned, where civilians weren't able to go and have something for defense. And I think if you break it down like that, you find only two cases actually in the Bloomberg study, once you remove residences and remove all the errors that were there. But at some point, I think, given the huge errors, there's a report that Bloomberg's people just put out for the Washington State Initiative. I can only do so much going through this stuff. So this last week I was mainly dealing with the FBI report and the Bloomberg stuff. But my advice is just to go through and read their cases, do your own news search, because you'll be amazed how they just are incompetent in terms of just simply listing out the cases there. But what I hope can happen when we have these reports come out this week, and the timing for this is good, is that if people were to go and say, look, how could you publish this study? How could the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal publish this study, not ask anybody for a critical comment on it, and not check for all these errors that were there? Because I guarantee you, every single Bloomberg study that I've taken the time to go and look at, and I've looked at quite a few right now, have a huge number of errors. This brings up something that I think is kind of funny. I've tried in numerous times to go and debate the Bloomberg people. This last Thursday night, I did a taping for Stossel for Fox that's going to be out this next Thursday. And my son is a producer there at Fox. So that helps. And they tried really hard to get the Bloomberg people to go and show up and debate. They will not debate. They will not go in public because they know what's going to happen when they go and have somebody on the other side. Somebody's going to go and list out the mistakes that are there made in their reports. And so the only thing they would do is they'd say, well, what are the topics? And then they would go and send in comments. They say, we hope you read our comments, you know, on the air. So they want free thing, but they don't want to have a back and forth discussion there. You know, the interesting thing, if you go to the Bloomberg websites for Every Town or Moms Demand Action, there's no phone number there. They have an email address that you can send it to. God, I think it just goes into the ether most of the time. I've tried getting a hold of their PR people and calling them up, and they claim they don't know anybody at Every Town to go and talk to, that they're only allowed to talk to people via email themselves. I don't know how much I believe that. they really try hard to completely control their message, and part of that is not being able to be publicly challenged on these things. So how do you embarrass them? Well, the way you embarrass them is to go through, takes a lot of hours, to go through their reports that are there, compile. I mean, you wouldn't believe. We have like 20 pages that we put together in this report that's coming out this week on just errors on how they classified where the attacks occurred, whether they were in gun-free zones or not. You know, one of the simple types of errors they make, for example, is they say, well, the newspaper reports didn't mention whether it was a gun-free zone, so we'll just assume that guns were allowed there. How many people would be surprised that usually the media doesn't mention whether or not it's a gun-free zone? I mean, usually when we have these types of attacks, for those who know me, I'll usually try to call up people in the area and say, can you go and visit the movie theater or something and take a picture of the outside? Because you know that the media is not going to report on this type of thing. And so, so it's only because I've been collecting this stuff over time that it's possible to go and deal with a lot of these mistakes that are being made. Now, I'll just give you a couple other examples of the types of misinformation that's been put out recently. When I was on Stossel for the taping this last week, they showed a couple Bloomberg ads. And one of the ads was one of a woman who had her husband or ex come in and essentially take a gun and shoot her. And, there's been a big push about the dangers that guns represent to women. There was stalkers and violence. They had a congressional hearing in the Senate in the end of July, and they've had ads on this type of stuff. The irony is, if you actually watch that ad from Bloomberg and you ask yourself the question, this guy's much bigger than the woman there. You know, they come into physical contact. Did he really need a gun to kill her? And here's the question. How much would the presence of a gun have changed his ability to go and kill her versus the presence of a gun changed her ability to be able to go and defend herself against the person who was doing the attacking. I mean, I think it's... I think it's pretty clear what the answer is to that. And so, you know, here's the irony. In the statement that they sent that they wanted read on the show, Stossel read it, and basically I knew the study, and it was, showed the opposite of what they were claiming it showed. So then another ad that they had, basically this study actually indicated that women who had guns are more likely to be successful in defending themselves, which is true. I mean, anybody who's looked at the National Crime Victimization Survey knows that women who behave passively are about 2.4 times more likely to end up being seriously injured than a woman who has a gun to be able to go and defend herself. The other ad that they had was one of two kind of playful kids playing around the house. The mom's there. And one of the kids finds a gun in the closet, and her brother comes in, and she fatally shoots him. Kids under 10. Here's the thing. If you look at, for the last 5 years that we have data, you're talking about 35 or so accidental gun deaths on average over those 5 years for kids under 10. But even that really doesn't give you the right feeling for what's going on, because most of those accidental gun deaths involve adult males firing the gun. Most of those people have some type of violent criminal history. You know, a gun lock or whatever isn't going to stop an adult male, surely an adult male criminal who's probably illegal for them to even own the gun to begin with, to stop from accidentally firing the gun. And what you find is that the risks, and then even a lot of the other households are not law-abiding households. I don't know if you remember Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine movie. They have a discussion in there about this 1 6-year-old who shot another 6-year-old. And Michael Moore brings in the mom and, you know, talks about the tragedy and stuff. He neglects to mention that the mom was a drug addict, that she wasn't present taking care of the son. Her brother, who ran a crack house, was taking care of the 6-year-old boy. And that the boy got the gun from one of the customers of the crack house who had gone into the crack house, had passed out, and had picked up the gun from the person that was there. So here's the thing. Basically, the risk of having a child die from an accidental gunshot in a law-abiding home is about equal to those children dying from lightning strikes. So it's something one should be concerned about. You don't tell kids to go run out when it's lightning in the middle of a field and hold up an umbrella. But, you know, there's certain common sense things you can have. But there's a problem with these ads, because what the point of the ads are is to scare people and to get them to do things that can actually endanger their lives. Because if you don't have a gun, and so people either lock up the gun so it's not accessible, or they don't own a gun in the home, then it actually increases the number of deaths, because people are less able to go and defend themselves. You find criminals are more likely to invade those types of homes, and they're more likely to be successful in committing the types of crimes that they want to commit. So anyway, here's something that I just hope, I know I've mentioned this a couple times, but I just hope this week, we're going to have two reports come out from the Crime Prevention Research Center. You can go to crimeresearch.org, or you can give us your emails later. And what I hope, and we'll mention on the webpage just some of the news articles that have mentioned these types of stories, and just say, look, shouldn't you guys have checked these things before you publish these articles on Bloomberg or publish these things on the Obama administration reports? I mean, can we really believe that the Obama administration is going to be completely objective and not politicize the FBI reports that are there? And I just hope these errors are so egregious. I mean, if you know a reporter, and just ask the reporter, just say, if you were to do a study where you claim that there was 160 cases of mass shootings, and it turned out that you missed 33 cases in which more than two or more people were killed, and you had 42% of your cases had either no one injured or wounded, or had at most one person fatally shot in there. And most of those are nobody was wounded. What do you think the editor would say from the newspaper? He'd yell at the guy. Reporters understand this type of thing. They would know if they did that more than a few times, they would be at risk of losing their jobs. There's one thing of having opinion in your pieces. It's another thing when people can nail you for factual inaccuracies there. And so, does anybody know reporters or been involved? You ought to ask them if you doubt me on this type of thing. They would have been called into the editor's office to go through that. Here we have such egregious errors in these reports that have come out in the last couple of weeks that I hope that we can use it as a chance to really embarrass them and let them know that, you know, somebody checks these things even if they don't take the time to look at these things before they have major stories on them in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and other places. Well, I appreciate your time here. I don't know. We have 4 minutes. Do you want people to ask me questions or something? Yeah, you can go through. It's hardly. Yeah, I was going to go through it. He's asking about the initial denials with background checks. How can you get that type of information? Now, the Obama administration stopped releasing the annual report that they used to have. That kind of gave the detailed background. Even that was less than perfect. Okay, but what you could find, for example, they have like 6 stages that things go through in terms of checks. The first step essentially occurs at the ATF, and about 94% of those denials are essentially ended at that point. And then you find the second step, which they send them out to the field offices for double checking at that point, you find about a third of those are recognized as having errors at that point. So just the first 2 stages, you end up with 96% of the cases being dropped. And it's really mechanical at that point, because they're just going back and checking, is this person on her list really or not? Okay? And so, but, you know, it takes time, there are delays, and they don't go back and fix the records afterwards. Look, when you go and do the background check, if you work for a company, and they did a criminal background check on you, when they did it, they'd have your address, your social security number, your birthday. They use all sorts of things in order to make sure they don't have false positives. They don't use all the information they even have for the federal government. If you read every single one of the news stories, okay, the way they've written it is purposely confusing, I think, okay? And so, you know, the headline in the Wall Street Journal was mass shootings increase. Okay, the same with the New York Times. And the thing is, they read the summary of the article that are there and look at some of the graphs, but they don't read the footnotes and other things that are there that are going on. They don't even have all the mass shootings, okay? The mass shootings they miss are primarily from the earlier part of the period, which would help flatten out what they have. But, you know, the reporters don't know that they're supposed to ask, well, was 2000, 2001 particularly unusual years or not that was there? But trust me, when you read what we have, it's just amazing how many errors that they make in terms of classifying even the reports that they have. Well, I'm not sure, but hopefully something this week will come out. But you'll be able to get the reports by going to the Crime Prevention Research Center. Just crimeresearch.org. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.